Quite a few Christian lawyers researched Jesus' trials. Of course, they all say they were illegal and fake. One of the main points is having a trial while the roosters are crowing. And if we get that far, we'll read in John 19 at the end, it was 6 o'clock in the morning when the trial was over with. You don't have fair trials in the middle of the night. Judge and jury would want to go home, get it over with. Also, they probably did not invite believers like Nicodemus and Joseph of Arimathea and at least Gamaliel, who didn't want them to oppress the Christians. So it was an unfair trial. Looking at the trials, there are actually four judges. We're going to try to go back and forth. Annas, the father-in-law, was actually first, but it would be easier to keep them flipping around the Bible to go to Matthew today. And if you'll come to Matthew 26, we'll look at the trial before Caiaphas, the son-in-law. Annas is the father-in-law, Caiaphas is the son-in-law. And John already thought that Caiaphas was covered, and there'll be one verse in John, but it's stressed in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, the trial before Caiaphas. If you come to Matthew 26, we will read verse 57 and following. Who had seized Jesus, that's in the Garden of Gethsemane, led him away to Caiaphas, the high priest, where the scribes and the elders were gathered together. But Peter was following him at a distance as far as the courtyard of the high priest, and entered in and sat down with the officers to see the outcome. Now the chief priests and the whole council kept trying to obtain false testimony against Jesus so they might put him to death. They did not find any, even though many false witnesses came forward. But later on, two came forward and said, "This man stated, 'I am able to destroy the temple of God and rebuild it in 3 days.'" The high priest stood up and said to him, "Do you not answer? What is it that these men are testifying against you?" But Jesus kept silent. And the high priest said to him, "I adjure you by the living God that you tell us whether you are the Christ, the Son of God." And Jesus said to him, "You have said it yourself. Nevertheless, I tell you, hereafter you shall see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of power and coming in the clouds of heaven." Then the high priest tore his robes and said, "He has blasphemed. What further need have we of witnesses? Behold, you have now heard the blasphemy. What do you think?" They answered, "He deserves death." Then it says they spit on him and beat on him. In reviewing Jesus' life, few weeks, we'll have to leave out Gethsemane. We'll have to leave out the Last Supper and get to the trials today so we can do cross and resurrection next week. It did say that a lot of people came to arrest him. It said that a cohort and leaders of the cohort came. If it's technical, a legion was 6,000 people and the cohort's 1/10. The leader of a group of 600 soldiers, now it might not have been full, but there were a lot of people arresting Jesus. So one could think of a couple hundred people coming to arrest Jesus. They first went to the high priest Annas' house. Now that's not in Matthew, and we'll look at it later in John. So there actually was a trial in a house before they dragged Jesus over to the temple and the more full Sanhedrin, although I think not everybody was invited. Many false witnesses contradicted each other among this nonsense, "Destroy this temple and I will raise it up in 3 days." Well, first of all, he was talking about his body as the temple of God, and he was predicting his resurrection. "If you were to kill me, I will raise up within 3 days." So it actually wasn't meant literally, and even so, if you took it of the building, it was hypothetical. If someone were to destroy this building, I could raise it up in a few days. So he was talking about himself, not the temple. If you apply it to the temple, it's hypothetical, saying he would know how to rebuild it. So they're fishing for these crimes. That's the one that came out. That's not going to work. The high priest now starts fishing for a crime. And you don't do this. You don't fish for a crime at the court hearing of a crime. This should be in advance, but here we are. And at first, Jesus would not answer, "Are you the Christ, the Son of God?" The Greek word anointed one is Christos. The Hebrew is Mashiach. "Are you the Messiah?" Mark says, "Son of the Blessed One." If they said that, they're trying not to use the word God too often, or Elohim, but it means the same. "Are you the Son of the Blessed One?" meaning, "Are you the Son of God?" Jesus answered, "I am," to both. "I am the Anointed One. I am the Son of God." Now, here in Matthew, the answer was, "You said it." Luke has both. "You said it, I am." And then Mark and Luke stress, "I am." And we'll give that some attention. The way they would do that in English is they have two I's. Ego, ami. Ego, we get from psychology, ego, me, I. But it's added here in Jesus' answer, so it's twice. "I certainly am the Messiah. I make sure I am the Messiah, the Son of God." It's actually twice in the original. Very often it's translated, "I myself am." It's a way of emphasizing it. "I certainly am." So to claim to be the Son of God is a claim to be like the Father. Like Father, like Son. That is how the statement is interpreted by the Sanhedrin. That's how it will be interpreted by Pilate. When he hears the phrase, "He said, I'm the Son of God," Pilate gets really spooked. It doesn't mean we're a child of God like believers are, where we get the blessings of God's inheritance like a child. To say, "I certainly am the Son of God," means like Father, like Son, I am exactly like him. There are references where he directly teaches, "I'm just like my Father," John 5:18. He was calling God his own Father, different than us. His own is idios. We get idiosyncrasy from it. He's claiming a different category of sonship than what a believer would say, saying we're all like the children of God and getting a full inheritance. He's like, God is his idios Father. He's just like his Father. And the second part of John 5:18, he made himself equal, isos, like an isosceles triangle. He is equal with his Father. Like Father, like Son. John 10:30, I and my Father are one. So that made them very mad. And the high priest ripped his clothes and says, "That is enough." Also in here, he said, "You will see the Son of Man sitting at the power of God." Well, I've read a few liberal authors that don't make any sense, and they'll say Son of God means a claim among the human. Son of God is a reference to Daniel 7, and the high priest caught it right away. In Daniel 7:13-14, the Son of Man comes up to the Ancient of Days, and God on the throne gives the Son of Man an eternal kingdom of all peoples and languages. So he said, "Are you the Son of God?" Ego or me, I certainly am. And I am the Son of Man, the one in Daniel, that God the Father will give the whole world to. So Son of Man is a lot more than saying I'm human. Son of Man is Daniel 7:13-14. You'll see me coming back, like in Daniel 7, and stand before the Ancient of Days on the throne, and Jesus will get the everlasting kingdom which is over all peoples. So they understood it. Quite a claim. I am the Son of God. I am the one in Daniel 7. The high priest ripped his clothes. Has he done something worthy of death? By their law, yes. But of course, the Jewish people, courts, couldn't do a death penalty. That just started. And so he'll have to go to Pilate. So now let's go to John 18 and look at some more of the trial. Now, when they arrested him, they first went to the father-in-law, Annas. Even before the one we just read, son-in-law. So John 18 is the only one that says that. But rather than turning back and forth, I'm going to do the trial before the father-in-law, Annas. Then there's just one verse here on the son-in-law. So I'll come to John 18. We'll look at the arrest and father-in-law in a house. John 18, 12 through 15. John 18, 12. So the Roman cohort, it's like 600 guys, I don't know, maybe 200 or 300, 600. The Roman cohort and the commander and the officers of the Jews arrested Jesus and bound him and led him to Annas first, where he was father-in-law of Caiaphas, who was the high priest that year. Now, Caiaphas was the one who advised the Jews that it was expedient for one man to die on behalf of the people. And then verse 15, Simon Peter was following, and so was another alleged unnamed disciple. Now, that disciple was known to the high priest and entered with Jesus into the court of the high priest. We'll leave out. Peter couldn't go in. He's out there, and he's going to stand by the fire because it's cold. Verse 19 now, the high priest, he's still called high priest, then questioned Jesus about his disciples and about his teaching, and Jesus answered them, I have spoken openly to the world. I have always taught in synagogues and in the temple where all the Jews came together. I spoke nothing in secret. We will stress verse 21, why do you question me? Question those who have heard what I spoke to them. These know what I said. And they slapped him, and Jesus was not happy about the slap. Now, he didn't defend himself, but he did say the slap was wrong. They're going to be quiet pretty much about the charges, but he did say that was unfair. Well, they arrested him in the garden, the whole cohort. That's a lot of people. They dragged him off first to the retired high priest, the father-in-law, Annas. Now, they call him the high priest. It's kind of like we do customarily. If someone is a former president, they just call them president. You know, President Carter, President Obama, President Trump. So he's not, Annas was not the acting high priest, but he was a retired one, so they often call him the high priest. Peter has to stay outside, but the unnamed disciple gets in. That's weird. Here's a good guess. He was a fish salesman, and they knew who he is. Just a guess, but, you know. Well, one of the sons of Zebedee was outside. Well, good. We wrecked it. Fish, bring him right on in. So the other gospels don't talk much about this part of the trial, but John was there. And so when he writes his book, he was a personal witness to it. So he adds to it. Jesus responds in verse 20, I didn't say anything in secret. You won't find secret teachings. I talk with all kinds of people in public, in the synagogue, in the temple. Verse 21 is a good verse applied to now. Why do you question me? Question those who heard what I spoke to them. These know what I said. Applied to now, Jesus is not announcing his teachings from heaven. Now, maybe in a tribulation period, an angel will flash through the sky and give the eternal gospel in the future. But that's not happening now. The attitude here is like the attitude now. Question those who believe in me. What do I stand for? What do I teach? Question those who believe in me. Now, he's talking about his disciples, but applied to now, we're believers. And Jesus isn't announcing who he is to the sky. And if there's going to be anybody defend Jesus, if there's anybody going to be teaching what did Jesus really teach, it's going to be us and believers like us. So he was silent at his trial, that is true, but he also wanted his listeners to say what he taught. And now that's our responsibility, to say what he taught. Question those who have heard what I spoke to them. They know what I said. So they smacked him, and while he really did not give a defense, he didn't like the smack. Verse 23. Well, this part is in a house, and Apostle John was there, so he wrote a lot about it. Not in the other ones. He wrote a lot about it. Then they dragged him over to the son-in-law, Caiaphas. Now, that's already in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. Look, it's the verse 24. There it is. So, the Apostle John was in the father-in-law's house. Only one. He writes a lot about it. They brought him to his son-in-law, Caiaphas. There it is. One verse. Verse 24. So John must have thought, well, it's already in Matthew, it's already in Mark, it's already in Luke. There it is. They brought him to Caiaphas. Then the story goes on about Peter. And then they bring him to Pilate. So they actually had three judges, Annas, Caiaphas, and Pilate. Three so far. Let's look at verse 28. Then they led Jesus from Caiaphas, like the temple, Annas in the house, Caiaphas in the temple, into the praetorium. It was early. Rooster's still crowing. They themselves did not enter the praetorium so that they would not be defiled but might eat the Passover. Therefore, Pilate went out to them and said, what accusations you bring against this man? And they answered and said to them, if this man were not an evil believer, we would not have delivered him to you. So Pilate said to them, take him yourselves and judge him according to your law. The Jews said, we are not permitted to put anyone to death to fulfill the word of Jesus he spoke to them, signifying by what death he was to die. Well, the praetorium, there's two places for it. I'm pretty sure I know right where it is, but we won't go off. You know, we have to get to the words of the trial, but I think I know where the praetorium is. Would say Pilate didn't really live in Jerusalem. Caesarea was the capital. And he's in Jerusalem because of the holiday. That's why he's there. Chief priests, we want to eat the Passover, which means they hadn't had it yet. And the chief priests would say, we can't go in to Pilate's vacation residence because it will defile us. So we want to talk a little bit about each. Didn't Jesus and the disciples already have the Last Supper? So why are the high priests saying they're going to have the Last Supper? And then talk about defilement going into a Gentile's house. I'm following Harold Hillner here. I saw him once. He's like 30, and he's like 65 then, and he's gone now. But the chronological aspects of the life of Jesus, he thinks that the Galileans had Passover on Thursday night, and the Judeans had it on Friday. And he has some rabbinic quotes for this. it was true there were so many people coming into town, it would be hard to sacrifice all those lambs right on one day. Josephus says 256,000 people, 256,000 lambs, and maybe 10 people per lamb. And if it's anywhere near right, 2.5 million, maybe. But he has rabbinic quotes that maybe the disciples had the Galilean Last Supper already, and yet the Judeans were having Passover on Friday. And if that's right, then they were having the Passover, killing the Passover lamb right when Jesus was dying on the cross at 3 o'clock. So maybe Galileans Thursday night already had Passover, Judeans next day. That's one way of working on that. Another thing that's interesting, and you'll know about it because you've been here a while, but why would going into a Gentile's house be defiling? I imagine that made Pilate mad. There's nothing on his feelings. Can you imagine? You're on vacation. This trial was over at 6 in the morning, so it's like really, really early. They either wake him up out of bed or interrupt his breakfast and say, your house is filthy, we can't go in there, you've got to come outside, and it's cold, cold enough to have a fire. So there's no wonder why he's frustrating. And one of the things he heard was, we can't go inside your vacation house because it's filthy. Well, I'll review it, and you might remember it from past studies, but Gentiles did abortions. And this is in the Talmud. It's just not well known now, but Jews would not go into a Gentile house because there might be an aborted baby in that house. Maybe they put it in the cornerstone in the foundation. You read that in the ancient rabbis, and that sounds ridiculous, but when I went to Africa in 2000 and taught all these Baptist African students that are pastors, they said, there's no aborted baby in the foundation of the Baptist seminary because they watched it. In other buildings, there will be aborted and killed babies in the foundation, because the pagans will put it in there. Like, really? It's not the same world I'm from, but that's relatively now. Pagans are pagans. So this is a little bit away from the story, but why wouldn't Jews go into a Gentile house? They might have done an abortion in there. If they built the building and rebuilt it, they might have put an aborted fetus in the foundation. That's actually true. That's why they wouldn't go in. Wow. So if anyone today, you know anybody's had an abortion, that can be forgiven, but for a long time, Judaism and Christianity has opposed it. We're not going in that house. Okay, now they've got to go to Pilate in the first place. Why did they have to go to Pilate in the first place? He said, this is a capital offense. He wanted to go away. No, it's a capital offense. So the Jewish courts could not do an execution. That had just started. There's one rabbinic quote that it started about 40 years before the destruction of the temple, which means it just started about AD 30. They just took it away. And the rabbi said, a woe to us, the scepter has departed from Judah and the Messiah had not come. But the Messiah had come. They didn't catch it. That when the scepter or the Jewish courts, they took away the power from the Jewish courts, they should have thought of the prophecy, and I guess they got that far, But the scepter of the court was taken away from Judah, and the Messiah had come, but they rejected him. So it could be the timing, even. The 69 weeks of Daniel shows the Messiah's coming, and that one is stronger. The day ran out on the triumphal entry, but maybe this one also. They didn't have the power to run their courts anymore. So, okay, Pilate has to put up with it. Let's read a little bit more. Therefore, Pilate entered again the praetorium and summoned Jesus to him. Are you the king of the Jews? Jesus answered, Are you saying this on your own initiative, or did others tell you about me? Pilate answered, I am not a Jew, am I? Your own nation, the chief priests, delivered you to me. What have you done? Jesus answered, My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, then my servants would be fighting so they would not be handed over to the Jews. But as it is, my kingdom is not of this realm. Therefore, Pilate said to him, So you are a king. Jesus answered, You correctly say that I am a king. For this reason I have been born. For this reason I came into the world to testify to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth hears my voice. And Pilate said to him, What is truth? When he had said this, he went out again to the Jews and said to them, I find no guilt in him. The chief priest must have told Pilate he claims to be a king, and so Pilate's going down that direction, Are you a king? And then, of course, the answer is, I am the king of truth. So Pilate has already decided, well, he's a theological or philosophical king because he claims he has the truth and the answer. That is not a crime. That's not the same thing as what we would call insurrection or overthrowing the Roman emperor. Now, Pilate's a little bit skeptical here. He's acting like an agnostic or an atheist. What is truth? And I'll stress that because I think he's going to change his mind and get real spooked in a little while as we read on. What is truth? For now, we kind of talk along about absolute truth, but I'm always reminded of the philosophy teacher I had back in college. There is no truth. Nobody knows anything for certain. What is truth? And what I'm giving you has been commonly called Scottish common sense realism. You can't live like that. So there is no truth. Is everybody in the room got a head on? I think they do. You think they don't? There is no truth, said the professor. And then I put this in other sermons, but do you think a scrambled egg will win the pole vault at this summer's Olympics? I do not. Do you? You're sitting on a table with no notes. I think you're sitting on a table. Is that true or isn't it? Whatever they do with their philosophy, you can't live like this. We believe in Jesus, trust him as Savior. Basically, it is the belief he's telling the truth. The evidence for that is very strong. It takes a step of faith, but it's very, very strong. Relative to other things, you say there is no truth. Well, that means we might be not in Amarillo. We are in Florida. Are we? Not very likely. It might mean that we're not going to drive home tonight after this or today after this. We're going to go out and wave our wings and fly home. If you say there's no truth, we're going to fly home today. That's possible. Very good. Anyway, he's playing the skeptic, and he's going to get spooked in a little bit. Let's go ahead and continue with the trial. He tried to get him loose. He tried to release choose Jesus or Barabbas, the close of chapter 18. They don't want you to kill Jesus. Now, chapter 19. Pilate then took Jesus and scourged him, and the soldiers twisted together a crown of thorns and put it on his head and put a purple robe on him. And they began to come up to him and say, Hail, King of the Jews, and to give him slaps in the face. Paul came out again and said, "Behold, I am bringing him out to you, so that you may know that I find no guilt in him." Jesus came out wearing a crown of thorns and a purple robe. Pilate said to them, "Behold the man." That's a homo in Latin, which often makes it into churchy liturgy. Verse 6, "So when the chief priests and officers saw him, they cried out, 'Crucify, crucify.' Pilate said to him, 'Take them yourselves and crucify him, for I find no guilt in him,'" which he keeps repeating. It helps having a copy machine so you can put Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John all together when you're doing this, because otherwise it's hard to catch it. But somewhere in here, Pilate decided Herod is in town for the Passover. We'll send him over to Herod. That's in Luke. Only in Luke. Send him over to Herod. Herod the Great of Christmas' son, Herod Antipas, killed John the Baptist, sends us over here. That's probably where the robe came from. Crown of thorns, maybe. But that's where the robe came from. Over at Herod. So that's in here. He comes back. Pilate is going to give up, but he thinks if he whips him, that's what the Jews could do without going to the Romans. If he whips them, maybe they'll let him go. No, they don't. They want him still killed. And then now, in the following verses, 7 and following him, he learns something else. The Jews answered him, "We have a law, and by that law he ought to die, because he made himself out to be the Son of God." Therefore, when Pilate heard this statement, he was even more afraid. And he entered into the praetorium and said to Jesus, "Where are you from?" And Jesus gave him no answer. Pilate seems very skeptical. Atheist. What is truth? Well, you have people today, they'll go from life started itself, no, that's impossible, the aliens brought it here. Back and forth. Just wait a few days, it'll go back and forth. Pilate, very, very skeptical. On the other hand, when he heard he is the Son of God, I think that's where we ought to put Mrs. Pilate's dream in here. In Matthew, Mrs. Pilate had a dream and said, "Stay away from him." Now, the Romans in dreaming premonitions about death, Romans did this when Julius Caesar was stabbed. His wife had told him that day, "I had a dream about you. Don't go in there." And he went in there, and they stabbed him. So to Romans and Romans history, this was a big deal. So Calpurnia, I think, she warned Julius, "Don't go in there." He went in there and they stabbed him. And here Mrs. Pilate warns Pilate, and now he learns, he says he's the Son of God. And believe me, Pilate interpreted it as like father, like son. "Where are you from?" And he goes from, say, agnostic to supernatural. Not Christian, but agnostic to supernatural. People do that now, back and forth. Verse 10, Pilate said, "Do you not speak to me? Do you not know I have the authority to release you? I have the authority to crucify you?" Jesus said, "You would have no authority over me unless it had been given to you from above. For this reason, he delivered me to you as the greater sin. As a result of this, Pilate made efforts to release him, but the Jews cried out, "If you release this man, you are no friend of Caesar. Everyone who makes himself out to be a king opposes Caesar." Here is authority, government. God, you know, render unto Caesar things that are Caesar, and to gods of things that are gods. Government, God. God allows the government authority. When we can obey both, we have to obey both. If the government asks for something that is a disobedience to God's higher law, then we don't have to obey it. And Jesus is telling Pilate, you have authority, but you wouldn't have any unless heaven gave it to you. Where are you from? And the answer is, I am from heaven. What is truth? The answer is, I am the truth. And he that delivered me to you has the greater sin. True, any sin means we need a Savior. But there are greater and there are lesser. Matthew chapter 5, the greater commandments, the lesser commandments. There are greater and there are lesser. Taking bubble gum out of the store is wrong. It's not as wrong as a mass murderer or a drug dealer. There are greater, there are lesser. A person goes to heaven by trusting in Jesus or goes to punishment by rejecting Jesus. That's the back and forth. On the other hand, in heaven there are rewards for more works. And in punishment, there's more punishment for greater sins. Delivering Jesus over like Caiaphas and Judas, a lot worse. Teaching children wrong is on that. Anti-Semitism is on that. Pilate gives up. There's no reference to washing hands here. But do note at verse 14, it's still 6 o'clock in the morning. The trial was all fake. It shouldn't happen in the middle of the night. It shouldn't happen while the roosters are crowing. The trial, even Pilate's part of it, all done at 6 o'clock. Musicians come, please.